Social impact everywhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back. Today, we have a very special guest with us, and we have Michelle Empson. And Michelle is doing incredible things around the world, but she is also the digital director at Women's March Global. I'm really curious to learn more about that, but I wanted to start first with saying thank you for, you know, taking time today to be on this podcast.
My pleasure, Avery.
And so jumping into the first question, I really want to learn more about, you know, who you are and what you do and, you know, maybe more than just Women's March Global, but really, you know, what Michelle does and why you believe you're a social impactor.
Okay. What do I do? I guess if we take a holistic view of this, my primary motivation, my passion and my purpose is universal human rights. So think United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and the very fact that human rights are a right. They're not a privilege. They're not an option. Yeah. They are a right to every single human being here on this planet. And so that's really the key essence. And I do that in a number of key areas. So I do it with Women's March Global, supporting the Women's March internationally, and we can kind of get into a little bit of that. But I also do it particularly around the LGBTQ community and most especially around the transgender community. And I work both at a local level. I'm very passionate about my school kids, for example. I do a lot of work in the high schools and schools in this area. On a national level across Canada, and also on a very international level, particularly in Eastern Europe and Ukraine.
Wow.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, it is that core belief that we are all due those universal human rights, and yet we continue to have to fight for them in so many arenas, both domestically and internationally.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a sad reality that, you know, equity is so achievable. It really is. And it's so achievable, these challenges, you know, that exist in, you know, in areas throughout North America, Europe, throughout the world. It's sad that they exist because, again, equity is such an attainable thing, right? Equality is very hard to get, but equity is, we live in a modern world in the 21st century. We can do this.
Well, you know what? You really need to flip that on its head, right? Because what it appears as though we're doing in all of these minorities and marginalized communities, it appears as if we are fighting for equality and equity. Actually, inequality and inequity is what has become baked into our cultures and into our societies. So it's not that we're fighting for equality and equity. What we're really fighting for is to break down the inequality that goes back centuries in many cases.
Yes, yeah.
But at some point, roughly about the time when humans began to think, which I think was our major disadvantage, was that we then started to have this power struggle that created inequality. And that has gradually gotten worse and worse and worse over the centuries, over the years, to the point where we are today, where we see all of this inequality either in our rights, in our freedoms, in our freedom of speech, in our salaries, for example, you know, all of these areas where there are these gender differences.
Yeah.
And so really, it's not a case that we're fighting for something. What we're fighting for is to break down all of that historical inequality.
Yeah. And I you know, like you said, it's not something that's a new struggle. It's existed for a long time, for centuries.
A very long time.
And there was an example that I can think of that comes to mind for me is, I won't use names, but there's a very big disparity in pay wages. And one of them was, you know, the difference between $230,000, which is a lot, and $270,000. One was a man, one was a woman. And just that alone, same job being done, if not better, but the difference of, you know, $40,000 to $50,000, on what basis, right? And it was the first time I heard that, I just couldn't believe that that is, you know, it's a very common problem that exists nowadays. And, you know, in some minority groups too, it's even more challenging. And it makes me, I have a very positive approach to things and a very positive outlook on how, where we will become, but we can, you know, have space exploration. We can do these incredible things, but then on the side, we also have these inequalities that still exist. Like, how can we be such an evolved species, but also not?
That's right. Absolutely.
It's crazy to me. Sorry, I went on a tangent there a little bit.
Well, no, I mean, you raised a very good point. And if we take a look at it just on based on the gender binary, then, you know, we see that disparity between men and women. But then if you take women and you look at a different subgroup of women, either Indigenous women, as we are up here in Canada, women of color, LGBTQ women, then the disparity gets even greater, substantially so. And, you know, that's another challenge, right? As we get into these layers of discrimination and these layers of inequality. And you know, that's, on the one hand, we're really fighting for this gender binary men and women inequality. But, you know, today, particularly as the movement has evolved over the years, we're very much looking at those other marginalized minorities. Mm-hmm. And looking at the most marginalized of our community, which are still not insignificant numbers of people, right? So people often think about these marginalized groups as being very tiny percentages of the population. Well, that's not necessarily the truth. And but their visibility, their value in our societal system, particularly post-colonial, is so low, perceived value, that we almost ignore them. They're almost invisible. That's the whole problem around the murdered and missing Indigenous people. It's not an insignificant number of people that are affected in that group. But due to colonialism, we've actually almost erased their existence from mainstream media or mainstream discussion.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy part.
And so I want to jump into the second question because it's on community. And I'm always curious to learn, you know, different perspectives on it. But with you know, with the challenges that are happening and what you're, you know, at the forefront of a lot of this discussion and bringing this, bringing more conversation up, how are you then making a positive impact in your community?
So I do that in two key ways here up in Muskoka. So Muskoka, for your listeners, is a beautiful area of Ontario, Canada, about 2.5 hours north of Toronto. And this is referred to as cottage country. This is where, this is ironically where we see another disparity. But anyway, you know, the vast majority of cottages on lakes here are second homes owned by affluent people from Toronto and much farther away. One of the things that we see up here is this 38% discrepancy of pay between men and women. And we also see in this area unprecedented levels of domestic violence, sexual assault. And all of these led me last year to create Women's March Muskoka. Mm. And this is how I got really involved in the Women's March movement. And so on a very local level, there's a team of us at Women's March Muskoka that really focus on raising awareness around all of these issues in the local community. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect. And then the other aspect, as I mentioned at the top of the call, was that I work with educators and with youth, ranging from grade one right the way up to high school, around diversity and inclusivity, around LGBTQ issues. I support the Gay Straight Alliance groups that are in the high schools that we have up here. And, you know, all of those youngsters are just, you know, they're in my heart every day, right? They're struggling with their own identity and struggling with how they fit in with the world, struggling with discrimination and prejudice, all of the things that I so hope that by now we would have had behind us, certainly not the case. And so So I do a lot of work around that area as well. So that's kind of my local community work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was raised in Muskoka, so I'm quite aware of a lot of the inequalities that exist. I very much so, but I find in isolated regions. And I know Muskoka is not isolated, but it's smaller farming towns, and the farther north you go, the more smaller they become. It becomes quite difficult, but. I find, and maybe this is just my opinion, but I find that the script is finally changing a lot more, where there's more opportunity to, be vocal about that these shouldn't exist, right? In a 21st century, when we have so much opportunity and so much access to wealth, it shouldn't be happening.
No, it shouldn't. And that's where the role of advocacy is so important, as distinct from activism. So, advocacy is around giving a voice or amplifying the voice of marginalized communities. And that's certainly a role that I take along with my colleagues up here for amplifying that voice on women's issues, on women that are unable to come forward, or LGBTQ youth that are unable to advocate for themselves in certain situations because it's uncomfortable or risky or whatever. And so that's kind of the role that I play along with many others in this area to just try and raise visibility. I mean, that's the first thing, right? Is to be visible. Acceptance in society for any marginalized group cannot ever be achieved without beginning with visibility. If we are a totally invisible minority, there is no chance of getting accepted in mainstream society. So it starts with visibility.
So let's jump into the next question then, because I think the onset of visibility and business, they sometimes go hand in hand or sometimes not. And so I'd love your opinion on, do you believe social impact, or maybe let's just say general impact, is an important part of business? And if so, why?
Oh, I absolutely do. So one of the other things is that I own and operate a digital marketing agency as well. And we identify as a social enterprise. Mm. And that is that that company, Sanctuary Studios, is the source really of money and inspiration in many cases that allow us to do the work that we do. Mm. So Sanctuary Studios is based on a couple of pillars. One is we provide outstanding services to our clients, which are typically small business women. That's the vast majority of our clientele. On the other hand, we also support the advocacy work that we do here as well. So both myself and my partner, Elena, we do a lot of work around advocacy. That kind of work is rarely funded. And so a good proportion of the profits from operating the company go towards supporting our advocacy and activism work. Hmm. And then the third pillar is that wherever and whenever possible, we employ LGBTQ people to assist us in the business. And so the whole thing kind of comes full circle, because very oftentimes, particularly in Ukraine, where we do a lot of work, to be LGBTQ openly out and employed, where you can truly use your talents and your passion, it's actually quite rare. So what we try and do is to do what we can on a relatively small scale, but do what we can to try and provide that meaningful employment. And welcome the diversity, truly embrace the diversity. So I think from a general standpoint for business, embracing diversity and inclusivity is absolutely key. For one, you never know the origin of your client. You never know if your client is a member of one of those marginalized communities, right? You don't know, but that doesn't diminish their value as a client. Similarly, you might be working with vendors or suppliers, and you don't know about their situation either, right? And yet, should that diminish their value as a vendor to you? So, you know, we often hear of the cases in the States where the baker refuses to bake a gay couple their wedding cake or birthday cake, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Well, does that really make sense from a business standpoint?
No.
Right?
No, not so at all.
You don't necessarily have to be a social enterprise in the way that we operate Sanctuary Studios, but by the same token, if you can at least be open to the fact that you are, whether you know it or not, right, working with members of these marginalized communities, and yet you value them as a source of revenue if they're a client, why shouldn't you extend that value to their contribution to their community and to society as a whole?
Yeah. And so why Ukraine? I'm just curious, is there a specific reason that you've chosen Ukraine to do a lot of your work, or is there a need? I don't know enough, and I'm just curious. I wanted to learn a little bit more about why Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely. So I met my partner, Elena, at World Pride in Toronto in 2014. She's a 20-year activist in Ukraine for LGBTQ rights.
Oh, okay. And,
she was visiting the World Pride Human Rights Conference. And at that time, I had been hired to shoot a video of that visit. And so during that time, we got together and have been together ever since. So as a Ukrainian activist, all of a sudden, Ukraine came onto my map. Mm. So prior to that point, as an advocate, I was in this comfy little bubble of Southern Ontario, right? Where, you know, really it's not that hard for LGBTQ people in Ontario. Yes, there's a lot of work we still have to do. Yes, we're still marginalized. Yes, we're still discriminated and prejudiced. But compared to what happens in Ukraine, is quite different. And so my eyes were opened when I met her and when I met her colleagues and when I really came to understand the struggle in Ukraine. As an example, we shot a film, Pride of Ukraine, as a result of meeting and that conference. We shot a film of Pride of Ukraine, which documents the rise of the Pride movement in Kyiv. And the first attempt to hold a Pride march in Kyiv was in 2012. We've been doing it in North America for decades.
Yeah.
In Ukraine, as an example, they've been fighting hard to get to that point. And so, you know, that there's an example. So Elena continues to work extremely actively on behalf of Ukraine and in Ukraine. And by extension, I naturally want to do that too.
Okay. So that's a great story. And through some of the work that I did through working at an education institution, I learned about a lot of the you know, real discrimination that still exists in a lot of, you know, other countries around the world. And that fight is you know, that much harder and that much more evident. So I think it's, you know, it's great when you know, as far as we have come, and like you said, there's more work to do, but as far as we've come as a, you know, a nation in Canada, there's work that can be done in other places too.
Right.
Yeah. And so I this last question is my favorite one because it's about your advice. And so I'd love to know, what's your advice for others to begin building a social impact in their communities?
So it starts with purely with diversity and inclusivity. It starts with unpacking our hidden prejudices. And, you know, we all have them. I have them. We all have them, like it or not. And when you become aware of them and when you start to challenge them is a time when you can start to be way more open. The other thing I think is around passion and purpose. For me, my passion around technology and around advocacy and around public speaking, around workshop facilitation has met a purpose, both with Women's March as well as with the LGBTQ work that I do. And so when passion meets purpose, we all of a sudden become so much more motivated, so much more driven to make a change, whether it be in our neighborhood, whether it be in our community, whether it be in our district, in our province, in our country, or the world, right? Where, whatever the scale is, you can make an impact. I think many people feel that as an individual, they can't make a change. They can't have an impact on other people's lives. And yes, they can. Yes, you can. And it starts with you, Michael Jackson, the man in the mirror. It starts with you. Mm-hmm. You are the change. And it starts today.
I think the one, maybe again, it's just, you know, my, a little more personally for me, a little bit selfish, but the one thing that you said that we need to challenge our prejudice is entirely true. I try to live every day challenging, my own rhetoric, anything that that's preset in what I believe in, because that needs to consistently change. There is nothing preset. There is nothing that should be. And that continually needs to develop, and it can be difficult, you know, consistently challenging your own prejudice. But it's the only way that as a human race that you can really move forward. Is you need to challenge, you know, what is right, what is wrong, because we're consistently evolving. We're consistently becoming, you know, a better human race altogether. And I just don't think you can do that without challenging what you believe in consistently.
And that's so true. And really the key message that we see a lot of today is around privilege, whether it be white privilege, whether it be male privilege. We have privilege given where we are in our status in society, our status in our community, wherever that is. And I'm refreshingly continually challenged by other marginalized groups that I work with and work for around my own privilege, and I have that privilege, right? And so, we often have to be extremely careful with that and its impacts on the work that we try and do. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes we might come from that place of privilege and be blind to what it's like to be a transgender person of color, which is an entirely different experience. That's another way of looking at it, that to recognize, acknowledge, accept and then challenge the privilege that we have as individuals based on who we are, what we are, where we are, and what we do.
Yeah.
Right. That's a key one to, you know, if anybody wants to start with really understanding how they can make a huge impact, the first thing to do would be to recognize, acknowledge that privilege. And then ask yourself, well, what can I do about it?
Yeah, and one thing that I think is a misconception on privilege is that you don't have to feel bad about privilege. Yeah. There's that consistent conversation, well, you have it better than someone else. Well, that puts guilt on a person in that situation. What the conversation, and again, in my opinion, really should be is like you said, recognize the privilege and use it well. Right? You don't have to feel bad about having privilege because it just happened, right? I'm a male who lives in one of the safest countries in the world. Like, I have an immense amount of privilege and opportunity above other people. And I've recognized that. And what I can do is I can then use that privilege to create more equality in the world and more opportunity for others. Right? I'm recognizing it, but you don't have to feel bad for having a privilege. That kind of destroys the entire idea of, you know, recognizing privilege.
It does, because, what you have is, if you're in that position of privilege, whatever it is, then there's an opportunity to use it for the benefit of others. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. I think that, one of the biggest takeaways for me right now was just that even when you don't want to, consistently challenge. Right? Consistently challenge yourself and challenge your privilege, challenge your rhetoric, challenge your prejudice, because that's how you you become better as a human being.
It is. And, you know, oftentimes we will take things as the truth. Mm-hmm. And just because we've grown up with them, just because we've heard them all our lives, or just because somebody we respect is telling us that that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I think what's really important is for us to continue to challenge that truth in quotation marks, right? Is it really the truth? Mm-hmm. And does it really stand up? And is it really fair to all concerned? And oftentimes in answering those questions, we find opportunities to make change. however small, mm-hmm. even small change. And you know what will happen is that if you stand up for something, you are unlikely, and I would argue never, going to be standing alone. Mm-hmm. There will be others that stand for that same belief. There will be others that that will be prepared to stand beside you or stand behind you or stand in front of you and actually come together as a community to make the change. And sometimes all it takes is the catalyst. Mm-hmm. That's what happened with Women's March as an example. It started with that catalyst. And that catalyst created a momentum which now covers thousands and thousands of activists around the world. We support hundreds of chapters. All came out of this catalyst that occurred following the inauguration in the US. So sometimes just being the catalyst of change, however small, is a significant step.
Small actions create ripple effects.
Yes,
they ripple across not just, you know, one challenge. It has a ripple effect everywhere. It changes, you know, things that you might not even see in relation. It starts to change those. And if it's done for a positive change, right, a small positive change, that is a good thing, right? You can do small negative changes, but small positive changes is what makes the world become a better place for everyone.
And, you know, if we take this back to business and take this back to that original question of what do you do from a business standpoint? Why does this make sense in business? Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing as a trend, and largely led by BlackRock, is that investors are now less asking about, from an investment standpoint, making a profit, having a great product, providing outstanding customer service, these are just, that's the cover charge for doing business, right? What's the impact that you're having on your society, on your community, on your country? What's your impact? That's the question that investors are asking now. And that's a change. That's a radical change. And so whether you're looking at this as I'm the investor because I own my business, therefore I'm investing in it, challenge yourself. What's my social impact? What's my social footprint? And take a look around your community, whether it's around your Chamber of Commerce or around other professional organizations, and just take a look at some of the other, your peers in business, from small business to conglomerates. What are they doing? What is their social impact?
I like that.
And what could you be doing better?
Yeah. What could you be doing better? Michelle, I want to leave it there because that's a beautiful message to leave on. And I also want to say, you know, that was only 30 minutes time, but even 30 minutes, the amount of knowledge that you've shared, I took a lot away, and I can imagine, you know, people listening have too. So again, you know, thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking time to be on the podcast with me.
It's been a pleasure, Avery. Thanks for having me on your show.